Hi everyone, welcome back to the Quantum Heart Cafe. And if you're just tuning in, or if you're new to the Quantum Heart Cafe, welcome. It's a show where I talk about books and different subject matter, and I relate it to sort of current events that are going on in society right now. And I like reading both fiction and nonfiction stories or books, and so, and then taking what I learned from those and either summarizing it or just talking about the key points and just relating what I learned to wider society, especially on topics that don't really get covered too much on the mainstream or even the alternative media. And mostly it's, you know, the technology and sort of where that's going and so on. So that's where I focus on the show, and I hope that you enjoy it. And thank you for stopping by the cafe. And before I continue, I usually like to give just a moment of gratitude. It's nice to start the show with some gratitude. And I just woke up and... you know, I'm just grateful for actually the human body. Our bodies are pretty amazing, and sometimes I often take my body for granted, and I know that I need to spend, you know, a little more time taking care, you know, making sure I get my exercise and eating well and stuff like that. And but it's just pretty amazing how our bodies are able to heal. And for the most part, sometimes, you know, we need a bit of help, whether that's from Western medicine or another group of medicines. And sometimes, but other times our bodies are perfectly capable of healing on their own. Like, I had something stuck in my foot. I can't remember if it was I'm not sure if it was a sliver or what it was, but it kind of got stuck in the bottom of my big toe. And, you know, a little callus had grown around it and stuff, and so it was uncomfortable, but it wasn't, like, excruciatingly painful. Like, I could walk and stuff. And I figured that, you know, maybe in my body, just like with other slivers and stuff like that, eventually the body just pushes it out. And so I was wondering, oh, you know, maybe if I give enough time and space to allow this thing that got stuck in my foot to get pushed out, then maybe, you know, I won't need to go see a doctor about getting it removed. And it worked. I mean, it took a while, like maybe a month or a couple months, because I'm not even sure when I stepped on it or how this thing got lodged into my foot to begin with. But yesterday it came out, and my feet had been wet because I just came out of the shower, and, you know, I was able to use one of those, like if you're doing like a little manicure at home, it's one of those things that helps to take off the old skin, and I was using that, and I was able to get it out, and I was just like, yes, because it felt so good, because then it's like this thing is gone, and like the discomfort is gone, and, you know, it was just a couple of seconds, and the thing was out, and I was just like, it's just, our bodies are just amazing. It's amazing. I'm grateful for that. And it's the morning here, so I'm hoping that you guys are enjoying your morning if you're here, or, you know, if you're another part of the world, your afternoon or evening or week or weekend. I usually do talk about some of the drinks, because, you know, it is kind of like the heart of a coffee shop. And I am enjoying a little bit of coffee. It's the store-bought stuff. Because oftentimes, like, the bulk... I don't know, they usually have decent bulk stuff. Like, it's the... There's a brand called Salt Spring Coffee that I have. And you can find it in stores often. And it's pretty good. And, you know, sometimes I do like to go to independent coffee shops, too. I just haven't had a chance to get around to one in the last little while. So my default coffee is usually the store-bought stuff. And sometimes, like, you could get the bigger bags on sale, so it's just a little more economical to go with the store brand coffee sometimes as well, just given how, you know, inflation's kind of crazy, a little crazy right now. So it's kind of nice to, you know, save a little bit on a coffee drink. But that all kind of being said, I do want to start talking about the book I finished reading. And it's Madeline Ingalls' fifth book in her Time Quintet, because I figured, you know, I do like reading a show. Like, I kind of like break... I do talk about more academic books on the show, and then I kind of like breaking it up and with a story. So, you know, before I start another sort of academic book, I kind of like to... I find that now I'm starting to really like to have a story in the middle of that, just because it kind of breaks them up a little bit, and stories are fun. And I just finished reading, I meant to finish Madeline Ingalls' Time Quintet, and I figured, well, why not? You know, it's the perfect time to do that. I just finished Beyond the Box, it was that book on B.F. Skinner and his behavior technology, so I need a little bit of a break from that sort of book, and I enjoyed, and that's where I thought that I will enjoy Madeline Ingalls' last story in that series, and it's called An Acceptable Time, and it's the fifth and final book in this sort of series, and it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it just as much as the first one, and I don't know if you're familiar with her Time Quintet, but if you're not, usually what happens is that in the series, each book is its own sort of self-contained story, but the characters are characters that we've met before. But the Time Quintet focuses on the family called the Murrays. So Meg Murray, Calvin, oh no, Calvin's not in the family, but he eventually marries Meg. And then Charles Wallace and Danny's and Sandy, which are the two twins. And then their parents, the Murrays. And so, and sometimes, like, there's family friends that come around or other characters that may appear in a couple of the stories. But mostly, the stories are, like, kind of standalone stories. Like, A Wrinkle in Time, like, nothing other than the characters, nothing from that story is really mentioned in the other stories again, like, not really a whole lot, which is kind of, like, it would be nice to see what happened in, you know, after The Wrinkle in Time, but that's just the way that she wrote them, and they're still pretty good. Like, I enjoyed Wrinkle in Time, and I enjoyed A Swiftly Tilting Planet, which is the third one, and A Wind in the Door. The fourth one, Many Waters, it's not bad, it's just a little different, it's a little more of a mature, maybe more of a coming-of-age story, and it focuses more on the twins and the time in history just before Noah's Ark. Like, literally right before the flood. and it's sort of like another time travel story. Time travel is really, I mean, it is the Time Quintet. So time travel and stuff is a really big theme in some of the other books, and it's no different here. Time travel, you know, even the title, An Acceptable Time. Time travel is a central theme in this story. And so what I'm going to do is I'll just kind of give an overview of the story, and then I'll give some of my thoughts and opinions after that, because it's quite good. I enjoyed it. The whole Time Quintet's really good. I mean, it is a little bit of a different take on a series like I was talking about. But the stories are still pretty interesting. The Wrinkle in Time and I think An Acceptable Time are my two favorites out of them, but the rest of the stories aren't bad either. The story focuses on Polly. So Polly Murray, and she's the daughter of Meg Murray and Calvin, and Calvin O'Keefe, and she comes to visit her grandparents, the Murrays, and they're still around. Actually, I'd say the most consistent characters that have shown up in all the stories in the Time Quintet are the Murrays, like the parents. And so it's no different here. They're a bit older. They're, you know, of course, Polly in the story, I think Polly is around college age. I think she is, you know, kind of fresh out of school, and it sounds like she's gone to a little bit of college already. So she's kind of, you know, she's a young adult. And so the grandparents, the Murrays, they might be in like their 60s and 70s or something, but they're, you know, they're kind of close to, I don't think they've retired, but they're close to that time, you know, where they're kind of getting older and stuff like that. And she's there visiting them because she hasn't really had a chance to spend a lot of time with them because she's lived sort of, I think she's lived abroad with Meg, with her parents, Meg and Calvin. So she's there visiting. I think she's just, couldn't remember if she's visiting. She might have been visiting for just the summer or just a period of time. And another person who's visiting is Zachary. He's kind of like a friend that she met while she was studying abroad in Greece. And so they became, it's sort of hinted at that they do become, or that they might become an item, but that kind of changes, and I'll talk a bit more about that later. And so Zach wants to visit May or Polly and, you know, see the area that her grandparents are living in. And so he visits as well. And while Polly is visiting the Murrays, she sees this man and his dog. And, you know, he looks a little peculiar because, you know, his clothes are from, look a little different, and she's never seen them before. But she just assumes that maybe he's, you know, someone who's visiting, or maybe he's just passing by or something. She doesn't really give it too much thought. Zachary sees him too, and she does also find that a bit strange, but, you know, she kind of just brushes it off. Until she starts seeing people from another timeline over and over again, because time is a central theme in this book. And another person that she sees is a girl named Annarel. And the bishop, who's another character, supporting character, has met Annarel too. And he calls her Annie. So I think I'll call her Annie just for the sake of simplicity, because I'm not sure if I'm actually saying her name right. So Annie starts visiting Polly because for some reason they can see each other. And Annie feels like Polly is important to the great pattern. And so she starts to visit a couple of times in the beginning, sort of in the beginning of the story. And Polly tells both her parents and the bishop. The bishop says that he's seen them too, and he's visited because Annie and the man who's his name is Carolees, and he's a druid. They are from a period or a time 3,000 years ago, and so for some reason there's a time gate that's opened, and so they're able to kind of pass through the time gate and visit the Murrays and the bishop. Well, maybe not so much the Murrays, but Polly Murray and the bishop. And so the bishop explains to them that this has been going on for quite some time, and that, you know, Polly and even Zachary must be part of some sort of great pattern because they're able to sort of walk through or interact with the people from 3,000 years ago as well. And at first the Murrays are pretty alarmed by this, and understandably they don't want, you know, Polly getting stuck in some timeline from, or some time from, or time period like 3,000 years ago. So they want her to stay close to the house and stay close to them. And, you know, at first she tries to do this. She does go to the swimming pool because the Murrays, when they got older, they added a swimming pool to their house. And what they didn't know was that, I think it was either it was an aquifer or there's an aquifer running underneath. And so the pool becomes like a sacred site, and it becomes, in a way, like a portal. And so Annie is able to travel through the portal and visit Polly. And Polly is also able to kind of inadvertently open a time gate at the pool, because she does visit the people of the lake, which is the indigenous tribe or indigenous people that lived in that area at that time. And she was able to meet Carolise and another druid named Tav at that. And they were able to, and Tav is a little more, at first he's a bit more like, you know, he's sort of like a warrior, and he feels that this, but maybe Polly is the answer to their prayers, because one of the central themes of, or part of the plot of the story is that, you know, that time period of 3,000 years ago, there's two indigenous nations. So there's the People of the Wind and Carolise and Tav. And then there's the People of the Lake. And the People of the Lake, they are a bigger nation. And what's happening is that they haven't received rain in a long time. And so they have started to raid the People of the Wind, their village, and steal food and stuff. And so Tav is worried that this is going to continue to happen. And, you know, the People of the Lake are a bigger tribe and stuff. So he thinks that maybe by sacrificing Polly to his goddess, that, you know, they can bring the rain back. And Carolise is completely against this. And actually, it's one of the reasons why they were banished. Because you find out in the story that Carolise and Tav were banished from, I'm not sure if it was Ireland or the British Isles. I'm going to say it was somewhere around the British Isles, because they wouldn't do what the druids in their area wanted them to do. Like, they didn't want to follow some of the customs. Carolise in the story, he's a bit more of a peaceful person, like a peaceful leader. Like, usually druids back then, and even now, because there's a resurgence of druidry, and even I'm kind of learning a bit more about my own Celtic and druid heritage, they were more of like politicians and philosophers, and they tried to find ways to kind of bring peace and diplomacy to different groups. And so he kind of is more of a peaceful person, and he tries to find ways to solve problems without having to resort to violence. And then he practices divination, and he has the gift of healing too, and that'll become important in a little bit. And then Tav is more of a warrior druid, so he doesn't really practice divination, or at least it wasn't talked about in the story. So he's more like a warrior, and I think he goes out with the warriors from the People of the Wind and often accompanies them on hunting parties and stuff like that. So he's more of like a warrior type character. And so Carolise is worried that Polly is going to, or Tav is going to try and do something to Polly. So he tells her to go back to her present time and just stay there. Don't come back to this time, because he's just worried that he won't be able to protect Polly from Tav. And so Polly does go back for a little bit of time, and the Murrays try to keep her safe as best they can. But Zachary comes to visit Polly, and he insists on going to the Star Watching Rock. And the Star Watching Rock is an area that's been featured in a few of the other books as well. And, you know, it's where they go to watch the stars and see them and talk to them and stuff like that. And so it's sort of become another important site. And what's interesting is that the bishop, he was able to find some Ogham stones, which is sort of like the language of the druids, and he found them around the Star Watching Rock. And he might have found one or two of them near the pool as well. And so they're kind of like, he's created notes and sort of drawings about the Oghams, and he gives it to Polly, which is actually becomes really important, because when Zach visits Polly, they do, and they go to the Star Watching Rock, they do get taken back to 3,000 years. Only the time gate has closed. I wouldn't say permanently, but it closed for the rest of the story pretty much. So they're stuck in that timeline, and having the notes on Ogham enables Polly to learn the language as best she can and communicate with Carolise and Tav and Annie and some of the other members of the People of the Wind. And so, you know, she runs there. Both her and Zachary are there, and Zachary also wonders if he'll be able to find a medicine person that can heal his heart, because one of the parts of the story is that Zachary has a bad heart. He doesn't know how long he's going to live. And so he becomes desperate in this timeline to find someone who can heal his heart, because that was one of the motivations why he wanted to go to the Star Watching Rock, is because he thought that maybe there was someone in the past that can heal his heart, or maybe if he goes into the past that he won't die. And while, you know, I don't agree with his actions, like, you know, he is a young man and he is on the verge of dying, so he becomes desperate. And in a way, you could kind of understand that, because, you know, if you're just a young person starting out in life and then you have this condition which is terminal, like, you know, some people may become desperate, and that's what happens with Zachary. And so, you know, he tries, when they're there, they meet the villagers, and Zachary tries to find a medicine person, and they do, but, you know, he's a young boy named Cub, but he's, you know, just become a medicine, he's just learning how to do work with medicine, and he's starting to learn how to be a healer, so he's not quite as powerful as he will be when he's grown up. But he does have some of the gift, and so does Carolise, and they're able to sense that Zachary's not well, but they're not really able to repair his heart, at least not yet. And so, you know, Tav also meets Polly, and, you know, Tav continues talking about sacrifice, but Carolise isn't having any of it. And there is a little bit of a confrontation with Tav and Polly, but Louise the Larger, who's a snake, and she's been featured in some of the other stories as well. I think she would showed up in A Wrinkle in Time. She showed up, and she kind of protects Polly from Tav. And as soon as Tav sees the snake, he backs off, because he's, you know, he's about to either kidnap her or attack her or something. And he sees the snake, and he immediately backs off. And then that's where he thinks that maybe Polly is a goddess, or at least someone who's really important. So he stops, you know, he kind of drops the whole notion of doing a sacrifice, and especially when he sees the snake. And actually, and then the snake becomes, no, I kind of messed that up a little bit. So they're not alone when they get, so it wasn't Tav that was confronting Polly, it was two members of the People of the Lake. So they People of the Lake sent a small raiding party, and they were kind of, and Polly kind of got caught in the middle, and Tav and Carolise was there, and a few other members of the People of the Wind. So there's a little bit of a skirmish between the People of the Lake and the People of the Wind, and then that's when Louise the Larger shows up, and the People of the Lake fear snakes, so they kind of ran away from Polly because they thought that maybe she was like a goddess or something. And then that's also when Tav realizes that Polly's really important, so he kind of drops the notion of sacrificing her. So that's the story. Sorry, because I'm trying to just because I read the story about I finished the story maybe over a week ago, so I'm trying to remember as best I can. Recall the story. So sorry about that, but that's what happens. And so the People of the Wind know that the People of the Lake are going to come back. So they're trying to figure out, they're just talking about what to do, because they're like, well, they're going to be back, and they're probably going to be in greater numbers. And you know, some of the warriors and the other people and people of the wind got injured in the skirmish, so they're not able to help out as much as they want to. So their numbers are smaller, and so they're just kind of they're worried that a larger raid is going to come, and then there's going to be more violence. And so that does happen in a way, but as it turns out, like, Zachary is missing, and so they're wondering if Zachary got taken away by the people of the lake. And he did, and I think I'm not sure if it was voluntary or not, but he went with the people. He did end up going with the people of the lake. And because the people of the lake saw Polly and the snake and they think that she's a goddess, they figured that they could kidnap her and sacrifice her to appease their gods so that the rain will come back. And so there's a couple... There is another raid party, but it's more specific. They came to kidnap Polly and bring her to the people of the lake. And it was just two... There's a couple of people. And then also a really important point is that during the first raid, two of the members of the people of the lake were injured, and the people of the wind took care of them. So, you know, they didn't execute them, they didn't treat them poorly. They healed the wounds and offered them food. And one of the characters, his name is Kleep. And he's kind of in line to be the next chief of the people of the lake. And that becomes really important because for a couple of reasons, he sees the hospitality and the kindness of the people of the wind. And, you know, he vows to try and make the violence stop, like to influence the current chief and try and have more of a peaceful relationship with the people of the wind, because he sees how kind they are. And then he also ends up meeting Annie, and they end up falling in love. And so, you know, he hopes to also marry her. And so he becomes sort of an important character, especially near the end of the story, where he's trying to not, you know, he's trying to save Polly from being sacrificed. But that's a little further on in the story. So after the second raid where they steal Polly, they bring Polly to the people of the lake, and that's where she meets, I think his name is pronounced Tynak, and he's the current chief of the people of the lake. And, you know, Madeline Ingle in the story describes the village as being, you know, the trees are dead, you know, there's not much animals left, and people are just, they're nervous and anxious, and they're just trying to survive because it hasn't rained in a long time. But then they also see rain often happening, or the people of the wind often receiving rain from where their village is situated across the lake. So I think that's where they figure that they can start taking, or they figure that they could start taking, raiding and start taking some supplies to survive. And also because, you know, the people of the wind have more resources than them. And so Tynak, you know, at first he's unsure about Polly and her power as a goddess. And Polly's trying not to, because she knows she's not a goddess. But she does try to use it a little bit to her advantage to, like, try and keep him from sacrificing her and stuff. And, you know, she stays with them and she learns a bit more about the people of the lake. And then eventually she's Ogham, who is Carolee's dog. And he's really cute. He's kind of featured throughout the whole story. And he's a dog, and I'm not sure what breed he is. I feel like he might be like a German Shepherd or something like that. Or maybe some sort of shepherd dog. And he sort of helps Polly escape from the people of the lake. And he's with her. He stays with her while she's swimming back across the lake. So she does escape, and she kind of gets back to the people of the wind. And they're trying to figure out what to do. Like, you know, do they try and open the time gate and have her go through or something like that? The only thing is that Zachary is still with the people of the lake. And you find out that Zachary was the one that told Tynak to kidnap Polly and sacrifice her in exchange for healing his heart. And so Polly's, you know, she's understandably, she's pretty upset about that. And it does create a rift in their friendship. I mean, in a way you can understand the desperation, but just because, and I agree, like just because someone is, you know, on the verge of death doesn't mean, you know, you get to, you know, offer up your friends for sacrifice. So there's a rift there and it doesn't really truly heal throughout the story. Like the relationship is never the same again. And then understandably, and Polly doesn't trust him anymore, but she doesn't want to leave him there because she's worried that Tynak might sacrifice him instead because he's also from 3,000 years in the future, so maybe he'd be like the next best thing. So she figures out after kind of doing some soul searching that she has to go back to the people of the lake and speak with Tynak and try and find a peaceful way to resolve it and bring the rain. And Carolee's also, and both Annie and Carolee's consult with the stars and stones, and they also determine that, yeah, Annie or Polly does have to go back to the village, and, you know, any sort of peaceful resolution is where no one dies, and where Polly, and there's a non-violent way to resolve the conflict between the two people. So Polly goes back to the village, and you know, she tries to speak with Tynak and Cleep, and she brings Cleep back this time because Cleep is, you know, thinks that perhaps he can speak with Tynak and try to reason with him and see that they don't need to sacrifice Polly, and that there's another way that they can, you know, the people of the wind are willing to share some of their food and stuff like that. Like, there's another way. And at first, Tynak doesn't really listen. You know, he's not really listening to Cleep. Cleep is doing his best to try and keep Polly safe. Not just from Tynak the chief, but also from the other people in the village who are, you know, they're exhausted and they're hungry and they're upset. And so they kind of look at Polly. They kind of give her, you know, the stare down a little bit because they just want this to end. They just want the rain to come back. And so she kind of becomes like a target in a way. I mean, nothing really, no one really ever attacks her, but part of the reason is that Cleep is around and to kind of protect her and stuff like that. And so the full moon is coming up, and that's when Tynak wants to make the sacrifice. And so Polly realizes that, you know, her efforts to try and reason with Tynak aren't working. You know, she still has faith that things will turn out, but she does send Ogham, who accompanied her back with Cleep. She sends him away to go get Carolee's and Annie and Tav and the people of the wind, because she thinks that, you know, she's going to need a little bit of help because, again, Tynak isn't listening. And so she's just like, oh no, so I have to, I'll send Ogham and I'm going to need a little bit of help here. And so they do eventually come back as Tynak is dragging her to the area to be sacrificed. But what's really cool is that as they're approaching the beach in their canoe, the people of the wind bring the rain. Like, you hear the rain, you hear the thunderclouds and the rain and the clapping and everything. And, you know, this massive storm comes. And, oh, and they also have the snake. So Louise the Larger is with them as well. And so I'm not sure what the symbology with snakes and the weather is, but I thought that was a really cool part of the story. And so in a way she helps them, I don't know if she helps bring the rain, but she kind of helps like solidify Polly as a goddess in the people of the lake's mind, even though she's not. But, you know, hey, whatever keeps her safe. So Louise the Larger's there as well, and so she helps. And the storm happens, and so there's lots of rain and lots of thunder, and the, you know, people are celebrating. You know, they're obviously not going to sacrifice Polly anymore. And, you know, Polly, in true druidic fashion, she's able to help mend the relationship between the people of the lake and the people of the wind, you know, and bring them together in peace. And I kind of figured that's where the story was going, that the two nations would unite. And in a way they do, because Cleep and Annie do, they do, well, they kind of, I wouldn't say they get married, but they are, I don't know if that's the right word, like, scheduled to get married. Like, they become betrothed to each other. And then, you know, Carolee's and Polly kind of outline behavior, or sort of like a code of conduct, in a way, for peaceful relationships between the people of the lake and the people of the wind. You know, no more raiding. And if one village, or if the people of the wind, if they kind of come onto troubled times, that the people of the lake will come and help, and vice versa. And that, you know, if the people of the lake find that they need extra resources, they can just ask the people of the wind instead of raiding them, and so on. So once this is kind of all settled, and it's, there is a little bit of blood in the, like, it's just a little pinprick and a handshake between the people of the wind and the people of the lake. And so that kind of seals their bond in a way. And so you have this peaceful resolution to the conflict between the people of the lake and the people of the wind. And it's, you know, it continues to rain. And so, you know, it sounds like the rain's back, and, you know, things will start to grow again, which is good. And that kind of reaches the end of the story, because Carolee's then says to Polly that it's time for her to go back, that she can't stay here. And it's true, like, she couldn't, you know, it's not her timeline. So as much as she has created these friendships and bonds with people, with the people of the wind, she has to go back. Along with Zachary. And Zachary's heart is healed in the story to a degree. Like, it's not perfect, but he's not, I don't think he's on death, he's on the verge of dying anymore. And what's interesting is that it's both Cub, who's the healer of the people of the wind, and then there's another healer from the people of the lake, and he's, you know, and he was also trying to help Polly as best he could too, because he recognized that there's, you know, that she's a decent person. It's just that the people of the lake and Tynak were, you know, they're just really scared about starving and people dying. So they were making these types of decisions. And then there was Carolee's, who's also a healer. I guess he was a healer in his own village as a druid. And Polly even has a little bit of the gift as well. So they were able, the four of them came together, and they combined their healing gifts to start to heal Zachary's heart. And what's interesting is that their hands were, the story describes them as their hands hovering above his chest, and it's almost like they were healing his etheric body. And after a while, they, like I said, they weren't able to completely repair his heart, but they were able to mend it enough where it wasn't going to be an issue, like, he wouldn't die anymore. So he did receive his healing while he was in 3,000 years in the past. But they, you know, when Polly and Zachary returned to their time, like I said before, the relationship between Polly and Zachary was never the same after that. And you know, Zachary, you know, Polly didn't really want to see him anymore, which is understandable. I mean, I'd be pretty upset too. She still saved his life, which is good. But, you know, she said that, you know, she just needs, you know, he needs to go off and do some soul searching. And the bishop told him the same thing. And Zachary feels the same way. So, you know, he ends the story by driving away. And I think his character shows up in another book, but I'm not sure which one. He hasn't been in any of the other stories in the Time Quintet, but Madeline Engel did write more. She wrote more books. So I think he's shown up in some of those. And then Polly returns to the Murrays, and, you know, that's about it. She tells him what happens and kind of carries on. They have something to drink and a warm meal. And then she kind of carries on with her life after that. So that's the story. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite good. I really enjoyed the stuff on the druids and Augums. And what was really interesting is that they talked about ley lines and water. And, you know, I've been learning more about spiritual science, and water is often a portal to the spirit world. And so it was interesting that the pool turned into portals. And that, you know, in the book they talked about how sacred sites are often close to water. Like, they're close to aquifers or other waterways. And I'm just like, oh, I wonder if that's the case in real life. And I started kind of exploring that a bit, and exploring, like, the megalithic structures. And I think I might talk about them in a later later show, because there's some really interesting stuff about that. And I also really enjoyed how they consulted with the stars and stones, not to try and predict the future, but just to try and understand their place in the great pattern, and to kind of see what they could do, like where they can go from there. And I found that kind of refreshing, because I'm just like, oh, okay, so they're not trying to, I mean, I think sometimes divination and, you know, reading the stars and stuff, it can give an indicator of what could happen in the future. I've been learning about astrology and a little, you know, and some tarot and stuff on my own. And the best for me is when I just ask for guidance and advice about what to do for a certain situation or something like that. And so I find just trying to, you know, maybe I'll try and also just learn to understand my own place in the great pattern and see what I'm supposed to, or try and see if there's any guidance for what I should do. And that's kind of what Madeline Engel was getting at in this story. But there is, you know, there might also be a place for trying to predict the future. But the future is so tricky sometimes. And even, they call them, like, people in the story, Madeline Engel does mention that there's people that try to manipulate the pattern for their own purposes. And that kind of does happen in real life, too. I think that astrology and occult science and spirituality are manipulated by the system so that it could use the pattern for its own purpose, selfish purposes. And that's kind of what's happening with Web3 and other types of, and this new technology like token economics coming online soon. Is it sounds like the system, through people, you know, groups of people that are all gung-ho about this, is trying to manipulate the pattern. Like, I'm going to call them pattern meddlers. And they are meddlesome. And they're trying to meddle in the pattern and use the pattern for their own selfish purposes. You know, like the metaverse and all this other stuff, like trying to game it and use, like, try and predict the future and then nudge people and manipulate people to go down certain pathways. And Alice McDowell has also talked about this a little bit in some of her shows as well, and in her research. And I'll link you to her blog. I usually do link her blog, and that's because she's done a lot of really important research on these types of topics. And like I said, there not a lot of other people are talking about it, and I think it's really important And that's why I wanted to talk. When I read about the pattern and the great pattern, I got so excited. This is like, this is great. Because maybe Madeline Engel saw some stuff too, and so she wrote these books. She's like, oh, I might not be able to, say this specifically out loud, like directly. So maybe I'll put it in the kids, in these kids' books, and maybe some smart, heartfelt people will read them and figure it out. So I was really happy with reading about the great pattern, and it's something that I want to learn a bit more about and explore in my own work, and on the show as well. And so I really enjoyed that part of the story, and I think, yeah, and just druidry and ogams and stuff, like I have been learning more. Half my family are from Ireland, and so I've been learning more about druidry. And actually, it was a druid that inspired this show. I know I said that, it was coffee shops in previous shows, like when, during the Rona, when everything was locked down for a few couple of years, I wasn't allowed in coffee shops. And so I decided to create the spirit of the coffee shop with this podcast. Because I love coffee shops for reading and just exploring ideas and writing and talking to friends. But it was a druid who gave an interview. He was talking, one specific point was when he was talking about a change in our hearts. Like, he kind of talked about how technology is, increasingly isolating us, and he was worried about that. And he said that, we need to have sort of like a change of, like, get back in touch with our heart space again. And that's why I call this show the Quantum Heart Cafe. Because it is, as we move through these interesting times, it's the wisdom of our hearts and our heart spaces that will get us through this, these tough times. And remembering the being in the human being, which is what John Trudell often talked about. And I'll put a couple of his interviews in the show notes as well. And so I just, I feel like I want to continue exploring that part of myself and learn more about druidry. And I know that there's like a modern day places where you can study druidry. And you can study either as a group or as a single person. I'll probably just do a single person study because I'm not really too sure about groups yet, but it's definitely part of myself that I want to nurture, and just that inclination to nurture my relationship with nature and the cosmos and so on. So it was a real pleasure reading about that in the story. And I don't know if the druids were here 3,000 years ago. They might have been. We don't know. I mean, there's so much about history that's often not talked about. And there are people here long before Columbus showed up, and even before the Vikings showed up, that, there was a lot more going on in the world than what anthropology and Egyptology talks about. And I don't think it was always space aliens. Space aliens, really, they're not really a topic of my show. There's lots of other people talking about extraterrestrials. It's just not my wheelhouse. It's not really something I'm interested in. I think history, the ancients were far more advanced spiritually and just intellectually than we realize. And they had a lot of wisdom as well. And I'm hoping that by exploring my druid heritage, I can get back in touch with that and maybe share it with other people. So anyway, I just want to leave that here. I think this is a good place to end the show. And I really enjoyed the book, and I'll put a link in the description if anyone wants to pick up a copy of their own. I'll see if I can find an independent bookstore that has it, because I did have to get it from one of the bigger chain stores. But I'll leave a couple links, and then you can make a choice of where you want to get it. And I think what I'm going to do is, I have another book that I want to start, because I want to really start diving into space and time. And just how other people perceive space and time. There's a very, like, the Western way of thinking about space and time, but Indigenous people and African spirituality has another different way of looking at space and time. And there's a book that I picked up. I've read it before, but I'm going to read it again because I think it's a direction I want to kind of start taking my show a little bit. And it's written by Vine Deloria Jr. And the title of the book is, C.J. Jung, so Carl Jung, and the Sioux Traditions, Dreams, Visions, Nature, and the Primitive. I think I've read it before, and one of the things that stood out is that Vine Deloria Jr., he's Indigenous, or was Indigenous, he's passed away, but he wrote about how Carl Jung's body of work could be a bridge between Indigenous nations and the Western world. And I was just, like, really taken back by that. I mean, Carl Jung's work is not perfect by any means, and, you know, there's a little bit of cultural chauvinism in there too, but there is some other stuff that could be helpful for, you know, helping us get back in touch with that nature. I mean, Druidry is another one, and there were Indigenous people in, or I don't know if Indigenous is the right word, but there were tribes and different nations that existed before imperialism in Europe as well. And that's kind of where I want to explore, because I'm looking for that, a little bit of that wisdom, and I feel like that could be there, or this could be a really good starting point. And I know that the powers that shouldn't be, the system, is also trying to utilize Carl Jung's work, especially his archetypes and stuff, to, like, manipulate people. And that's not what I'm trying to do here. And I don't even know if that was Carl Jung's intentions anyway, but oftentimes the system, you know, this predatory system, it'll take whatever it thinks is useful and use that as a tool to manipulate people. So it will manipulate, it will borrow and cherry pick spiritual practices and traditions and so on to try and manipulate people to get them to do certain things, you know, like nudge them on a pathway or something. And I think that's kind of what's going on there. But I don't think Carl Jung's stuff is bad in and of itself. I think that there's, you know, the system has an intention for it. But I don't think that was Carl Jung's original intention. So I want to explore his work and learn more about it and explore my Druid background and share that with people. And I want to continue to explore, like, token economics and stuff as well. But I'm just going to start with this book, and then maybe I'll go back to reading about token economics, because maybe there's going to be, maybe I'll see some really interesting overlap with those two that I didn't see before after reading this book. And oftentimes that happens. So I'm going to just leave it there. And so the next show, I'm going to talk about the first couple of chapters of this called Carl Jung and the Sioux Tradition by Vine Deloria Jr. So I hope you come by and check out or tune in as well. And if you liked what you heard today, please consider liking and following along. And thank you so much for stopping by the cafe. And I hope you all have a blessed week and weekend. Thank you, and bye-bye.